How can the understanding of neurology impact our performance? You're listening to the Mindset Forge podcast. Today's interview is with a former world-class pole vaulter, a beluga whale, killer whale, and dolphin trainer, and now a functional neurologist. Back in 1999 and 2000, Dr. Roger Bourbon competed at the highest level in pole vault for the Costa Rican national team and reflects on his mindset of being in flow state while competing, how he trained killer whales, and how functional neurology can help get to the root cause of people's ailments and get them back to having optimal health. One of the things I loved about this episode is towards the end, he offers two exercises you can do to actually check to see if your neuromuscular system is coordinating properly. There are two exercises to do that you can do while you're listening, as long as you're not driving, and check to see that your left and right hemisphere of your brain are accurately understanding what your body's doing in space. Before I kick off the episode, here's another five-star review from Nutty Futures. She writes, "Always inspiring, Barton is legit. He gets the biggest names in fitness to talk mindset, their lessons applied inside and outside the gym, and I'm so stoked when he interviewed Dustin Poirier's coach. Such a good episode. That and the Bethany Shadburn are my two favorites so far. Highly recommend." Thanks, Nutty. All right, buckle up and enjoy the episode with Dr. Roger Bourbon. All right, Roger, so let's start off with a question about you as an athlete. You grew up here in Texas, but your parents are Costa Rican, and you had the opportunity to be on the pole vaulting team. So talk about that time, what you loved about the sport.
Oh, man. So the sport, I mean, one is just fun. One of the biggest things about pole vaulting that is just inherent in the sport is literally how high can you go? And when I was a little kid in 1984, so I was in third grade, the 84 Olympics were like magical. And I remember clearly seeing this guy go over the high jump. It was like he should have come down, but he kept elevating. It just so totally got me that I was literally just trying to see how high I could jump, like right then as a little kid. And it just, and right at that moment, how high can I go became like a theme in me. It just was like instant. And it was so fun. It was just fun. And even when I made the commitment to be full on, leave my first career behind and go into a big, what if I don't make it or whatever, it had to stay fun.
It's an incredible sport because it's really a singular discipline of like using this pole to get you as high as you can over the bar and then safely down to the, onto the pad. Talk about maybe a moment in your career as a pole vaulter where you just feel like everything was clicking and you just really found your best.
I was lucky enough to have a whole year like that. It was that I was undistracted. I was fully committed. I literally loved doing it because it was so fun that even the pain was fun. Bloody hands on the high bar in gymnastics room, you know, all that, even that is like, you kind of smile through it. It's a little weird, but through those kind of things, that's the only way you develop the mental muscle to know that whatever the situation was, I'm prepared. When you're there, you don't feel human. You feel like you're an angel in a way. I don't know. It's just like a kind of crazy feeling, but it's confidence. You know what it is? The feeling is confidence, and confidence is certainty. That's what confidence is. You know the outcome because you've done the work to then become capable of an outcome. And that capability delivers confidence. So performing with confidence, true confidence, not cockiness, not arrogance, and not foolish confidence. Foolish confidence means you haven't done the work and you're going to get hurt. You're going to get, it's not going
to
end up well.
Or bombastic. You're trying to show off.
You know what? In that flow, what happens is there's no part of you that's not with you. And so what happens oftentimes with all athletes is you work to do enough quality reps so that your brain isn't in the way of you. It's pulling you along, and you're just jiving. Your brain, your spirit, your body are like all synergists that are like wind in your sails. And it's a do no wrong feeling, not a thinking, a do no wrong feeling, like nothing bad can happen. That's the flow, like the flow. And from a neurologic standpoint, what I'd say is when you've done enough reps that you're performing from your this place called the cerebellum, that's like the zone. When you're thinking with your forebrain, you're going to be slow because you haven't done the reps to where this is just a pathway. You know, when you're in the quote zone, you're operating through this part of your brain that you don't have to run through the thinking loop. And it's just, it just is like everything is working for you. Not just with you.
Yeah.
It's for you.
Watching a pole vaulting performance, I imagine there's a sound that the pole vault makes when it hits the trap or whatever. What's that thing called?
Box.
The box, mm-hmm. right? Is it one of those things where it's like clack?
For me, the hardest part was the run. The vault was very easy.
Because
when you set the run up right,
right.
the other stuff kind of flows.
You gotta get as fast as you can at just the right moment.
Right. The body position at that instant moment has to be in a certain way. So if you are supposed to have your arms straight over your head and just maybe a tad bit in front, and your elbows a little bit bent short, and you leave a quarter inch off your arm length, mm-hmm. you just kind of screwed yourself. If you got to work to where every step as you come down lands on the exact same part of the track, so that when you leave the ground, you know exactly where your foot should be, and it is there. So that when the wind is blowing at 5 miles an hour at a tail crosswind, are you going to end up at that same exact spot if it's blowing at 7 miles an hour? For me, it was when I would transfer from a run to a lift, and it's like I got put in a slingshot in a great way.
Mm-hmm.
When you're out of position and you miss that timing, you're in a fight. And you can fight and brute your way through it.
Kind of muscle into the yeah. right position.
Like yeah. there was just a new world record made yesterday in pole vault.
Really?
Insane world record. And if you watch it, anyone watching this who's never vaulted or even ran with a pole in their hand, just like, it looks so easy. And when things are done right, they look easy and it looks smooth. But man, there is a brutal amount of force that goes into that box when that pole hits.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at that pin, that bowl, the pole bend and all the force that's in there. For me, that movement from horizontal to starting to go vertical, when that just glides upward, it wasn't a sound. It was just this feeling of like flow.
Yeah.
It's a feeling of flow. And really, it's a feeling of synergy. Like this motion that I made running now just got compounded into extreme force upward, lifting all my body weight up.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And you have to fully and commit and fully accept just that immense amount of force on your body and be relaxed in the right way. It's crazy. I want to ask you this question. This is 22 years ago, right? 23 years ago?
Yeah.
1999.
Yeah.
So knowing what you know now, knowing what the industry and kind of the understanding of sports and psychology and all that kind of stuff is now, if you could go back and talk to yourself as an athlete in 1999, headed to the Pan American Games, and what's one or two things that you might like try to introduce to yourself at that age that may have made a difference?
From a technical standpoint, nutrition. I tried, but I just didn't know. Back then, like the internet wasn't all over, you know, we just started wearing giant cell phones on our belts and it was cool. You know, it was harder to get the information. And then even as it is now, it's harder to know what information is the right information for a power event like pole vault mm-hmm. versus this event or whatever. So that part, I was grossly undernourished, I believe, during that time. And
in what sense? Like just having the right macronutrient ratio? So break that down a little bit.
So here's just an example in a day, of sure. day in life. So oftentimes we'd have two workouts a day. Mm-hmm. So we have a track workout, and whether that's vaulting or running or long jumping, whatever, it's at the track, and that's sometimes about a couple hours long. And then we got a gap in between there. And this is an exact example. I had a box of like shakes, like protein shake, you know, packets. Mm-hmm. And I'd go leave the track, put it into a container with some milk. Nothing hydrates you like milk.
So I hear.
And then, you know, let my belly not like balloon up from just a giant thing of milk and powder.
And
right?
whey protein.
Yeah. And then shortly after, I'm either doing gymnastics work and or, you know, powerlifting or one of those kind of things. Now, add on to that, that this is in Texas. This is in summertime, Texas, which is like a bazillion degrees in your vehicle, which is exactly where I kept my shake powder. I could have just put classroom chalk into a cup of milk and had the same effect. Anything that might have been useful had been cooked out of my out of my powder, right? So then I'm basically going
don't
to
don't store your whey protein in your car, folks.
Yes. So literally I'm going and training and literally building, trying to build myself. So if you climb inside your body and kind of think about protein replication,
yeah.
you've got to have some raw materials to build with. If you aren't eating well, if you aren't putting those materials in there, you can't build from stuff. So you have to steal it from places. Mm-hmm. So now I know stuff like how you will rob amino acids off your liver. Like you know, these kind of things. So that's probably one of the things is just nutrition and nutrition per event or per sport, per what your specialty is different, you know? And then the other thing is, you know, on that note, for those listening, competing at elite levels is not a healthy thing. Training as a pole vaulter is not healthy, right?
It's not something you could do for your whole life. It's a window of performance.
Well, when I retired, that's when I started monitoring my heart rate because I was a power athlete before. Cardio didn't matter. Now, I was super fit and I had actually pretty good endurance. My heart couldn't go one lap around the track without getting out of my cardio zone. And I wasn't even close to breathing hard. So that said, sport-specific stuff for professionals is about performance and outcome. It's not about health. So when people are looking at people like I was shredded. I mean, I was 4% body fat, 184 pounds. I could jump high. I could lift a lot. I could do all these things. And I look like I would like to look like that guy right now, mm-hmm. but I'm probably healthier now than I was then. And then the last part I would probably coach myself on, or if I was myself talking to me back then now, it would be to surround myself with more experts.
Hmm. More people to give you feedback on how you can be better.
Yeah, like and not necessarily more. I had one source for my coaching, and then that source went away at the most critical time. I could have reached out and I had the ability to go and plug into a great resource. And I don't know why I didn't, but I didn't. You've got to have someone above you. Michael Jordan still had a coach.
Right. And a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a nutritionist. Jackson. All that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a mind coach.
Yep.
Like they did. I know the stuff they did. So you have to pull from higher than you
yeah.
if you want to expect to elevate. And so that would have made the biggest shift in outcome.
Mm-hmm.
the biggest shift in health would be the nutrition.
Well, I think too, when things are going well, like you're talking about that year where you just felt like you were in flow a lot, like, and you and Scott were working together really well, like you probably didn't need those extra coaches. But when injuries happen, when things start to kind of not quite go as well, that's where you need the people around you to kind of keep you on track and provide the information that you wouldn't naturally understand.
Yeah. And even recognize, even, hey, guess what? It looks like you're in a spot where you need to look for support. And probably that's one of my biggest deficits is I think I can do all kinds of things all by myself, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So before we get into you as a functional neurologist, and I want to spend a lot of time about that, I do want to talk about that time. You mentioned like another career, and from 1994 to 1999, you were a behavioral modification specialist at SeaWorld, which, and also a SeaWorld beluga whale, dolphin, and killer whale trainer. Boom, mind blown right there. Talk about that experience in the sense of like, what did you get from that? How does that inform who you are?
Oh man, what I got from that is relationship is probably one of the biggest things. Behavioral modification as a career is mostly about shaping behavior toward a predicted outcome of behavior. But this is behavior of a living organism. And it doesn't matter if it's a 10,000 pound killer whale, or if it's a 30 pound child, or if it's a 20 pound dog, behavior in mammals is mostly the same. So there's some truths about it that with killer whales, you aren't using words. They have ears that you can't see, but they have ears, but that's not how we communicate with them. It's funny to see if you go and watch at SeaWorld, trainers do sign language of sorts with the animals, with the marine mammals like the killer whales, belugas, dolphins. There's body signals that we do that mean something. If you watch when the animals are just kind of swimming around and somebody comes up to the glass, like between shows or whatever, and they try to do the exact same body motion or exact same sign language that we would do, they don't do anything. There's no response. Well, why would that be? Because there's no relationship.
Yeah.
There's no relationship. And so one of the things that I got from SeaWorld was the deep, deep value of a relationship built on, well, consistency probably is the most important thing. Because if, and you know this to be true, we all know this to be true with people we know in our lives. If they're consistent in their behavior, there's safety in how you can communicate XYZ with them. If they're inconsistent, then you might refrain from sharing certain things because you don't know how it's going to go. So if you build that with enough consistency, there's predictability that they get to have. And then one can choose to comply or not comply because there's free will. And so if it's a bigger payoff to not comply, as you know, sometimes we'd be working with the animals, and you know what's more interesting than interacting with me, the trainer, is if she's in heat, those hormones are way more important than what I want to be doing with them, or than this bucket of fish, or than the belly scratches that I'll give you.
Right.
So there's payoffs, right? But if you have a consistent relationship enough to where they know that if I comply with you right now, I'm going to be in a good situation later. I have that trust. And then, and in that case, like, hey, you know what? When we're done, y'all two go have a date night. And that's kind of how it worked, you know? Yeah. And I would say another big thing is just hard work. There's the entertainment side of SeaWorld, and they look at it like just the fun and games that a show looks like. Just like, you know, if you see Michael Jordan back in the day, like playing and like jumping up, his tongue's hanging out, he's having fun, you know, you don't see the 10,000 reps that happen. So there's a bunch of hard work that there's just no way around it. And back to the relationships, there is no way to shortcut a true relationship.
If you're listening and you're a coach and you're thinking about, you know, how you can get more out of the kids on your team or something like that, You got to think about your ability to show up consistently every day in that way. Let's go to you as a functional neurologist. And you've really specialized in a lot of different things. And just in your 17-year experience, talk about working with athletes and working with general population and some of the things that you feel like probably people miss but are super important for people to not just stay healthy but be able to really show up in their best for life.
Man, boy, there's a lot on that list, actually.
I'm sure there is.
And, you know, it's funny because sometimes it's the simplest things that we overlook. And it's kind of like the old KISS rule, right? You know, keep it simple. So from a training standpoint, things that are missed are sleep and water. I mean, you think, you know, with all the neuro and all the years of that stuff, there'd be something really big. But look, if you don't get sleep and that is forced upon you, that is called torture. That's called sleep deprivation torture. Mm-hmm. So your body cannot perform that way. And so in our society especially, oftentimes we can wear as a badge of honor that number of hours we work and all these kind of things sometimes. Or even how long we train. Like, because you can overtrain just like you can overstay up. You can be overactive, you know. So being underrested has such a cascade of downflow fallout, you know. So how simple that is. Mm-hmm. I say.
So what do you recommend? I know it depends on if you're an elite athlete or what your kind of the output of your the stress in your life is. But what's a general thing that you tell, you know, adults
for us? For us, well, one, I get asked a lot, especially as a chiropractor, what's the best bed? What's the best pillow? And my answer is, I don't care if you sleep well hanging upside down by your toes. If you wake up well and refreshed and ready to go in the morning, then you got a good sleep. Okay, mm-hmm. So if that's on a $5 mattress or a $5,000 mattress, great. Yeah. You know, so there are people who just require more sleep, and there are people who require less sleep. There's not a number on like what is the best sleep. Now, there are gobs of studies that say people need this much. And I will say there's different times that people need different amounts. I've got a 9-year-old at home, a 13-year-old, and a 16-year-old. And you can watch as a parent, you can see the needs of a growing body, nervous system, hormonal system, skeletal. You see the needs change. Mm-hmm. You see the needs change as, you know, we see executives who have different demands and so forth, and somehow they can ramp up. College students going through finals can go through all this stuff, but you do that too long, and what's going to happen? Crash and burn. So as far as what is the ideal amount, you might ask yourself, okay, if I had a 4-day vacation, let's just pretend, and you went to sleep and you woke up when you wake up, what would that time frame be? And then when you wake up with that amount of sleep, are you truly awake? If you did that over a few days, or let's say that you had 2 days of the weekend or 1 day of the weekend, but you can have multiple weekends over a month that you can put together several days of just waking up when you wake up. Note, what time frame is that? Because your cycles of sleep, you have multiple cycles during the night, they can vary a little bit what the total number of cycles they are. If you wake up like not rested, you might have woken up at the bottom of the cycle. Mm. And so if that happened at 6 hours, but if you woke up at 6:45 or even 5:15 and you were like, boom, ready to go, that tells you something.
Right.
So I know everyone wants like a single answer, and there's not one.
Yeah.
There's just not one. So
when I wore a Whoop watch for 6 months specifically to track my sleep and really look for recovery and look for, you know, the various cycles of my sleep and that kind of thing. And, you know, it was not always consistent in terms of like, well, if I get exactly 8 hours, everything's right. Great. But I definitely noticed that like 7 or more, I slept. I mean, I felt better. And then secondly, like I just the recovery number, my HRV was up and things like that. Mm-hmm. If I got less than seven, I just felt like I got hit by a bus.
Yeah. Okay.
And
perfect.
That's just like, and it was a very obvious feeling of like, oh, you like wake up and you're like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't feel recovered.
So that is you taking note of, and actually pursuing the answer to that.
Yeah.
But you know, hey, seven and under, this is bad news. So what's that make you do? It makes you change your behavior.
Create a window that allows. Yeah. You know, and the other thing is if you don't get it, then just how am I preparing for that next day? You know, okay, so last night, maybe I had to get up 4:30 in the morning, didn't get a full night's sleep that I would have liked. But what am I going to do tonight to make sure that I get closer to eight? Multiple days of poor sleep is really where it starts to derail our overall, you know, ability to perform.
Yeah. And then since we're talking to athletes here, right? So let's pretend that you're scheduled tomorrow for, it's a test day physically, mm-hmm. or this is like the grind week or whatever the thing is. Like you have to be able to be okay and mature enough to have an audible, right? So if you, something came up, kid got sick, whatever the deal is, but you didn't get to have your sleep, and that is a big deal that you know is going to impact you, and it will impact you. Are you going to just stay to the letter of the pre-written workout, or mm-hmm. might you vary a little bit?
Right.
You know, and so these are things, this is what I would call a mature athlete versus an immature athlete. It has nothing to do with age. It has to do with being aware of how you're feeling, how the conditions are. I mean, I remember when I was an immature athlete where I had a sprint day planned and we had an ice storm that day. And by golly, I was at the track. And by the time I finished my workout, literally the whole front half of my body was ice. There was literally just a sheet of ice on the front of me. And like, I probably got not only nothing from the workout, I probably taught myself how to move slower from adhering to the workout plan.
Right.
So, you know, live and learn and becoming a little more mature is like, hey, am I hydrated today? Did I like, was I at the office and normally I have a cup of coffee and I had five? Like, might that be a problem if you're going to do box jumps that day? Yeah, right. you might blow a hamstring, you know? Yeah. So these are just like things that you might have to modify for things like sleep or whatever. But I call that being a mature athlete, you know?
Yeah. I think there's time, especially for the immature athlete or somebody who's less than a year into developing a habit of working out consistently, is you want to will yourself. You don't want to come walk into the gym or go on a run or do your workout and feel like, man, I'm sucking air. I got to get my mind right, you know, and you kind of muscle through it, or, you know, and you feel like there's something wrong with you or there's something not right about your mindset. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of pushing yourself versus when you've been doing it a while and you kind of know the range of your body's performance or ability level, you have that unique perspective of saying, hey, you know what? Today's just not the day that I need to be like maxing out. I do not feel quite 100%, or I know looking back that my nutrition, my sleep, my water is not quite where it needs to be. It's not worth it to go that far.
Right. I think you make a great observation, a huge point. Context, you know, if you're new to the lifestyle of, let's say, committed long-term fitness, that's a lifestyle. If you're newer to that, you just simply may not have the context chronologically. You just may not have built enough time in to know the difference yet. And those things, you know, you just learn those things like you learn when you're a kid not to touch the hot stove. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just got to get burned to learn. And you learn the difference between just will versus checking in with yourself. You know, right. So, and sometimes that's just, you know, it takes time to build that context.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the exploration you talked about, like that year in which you just like were in flow, you know, like you almost looked forward to like the hands bleeding. And I think about like, you know, every workout or every time you go out and do a sport or perform, you're not going to feel 100%, but like, hey, my knee's feeling a little weird today. Like, is there a couple of stretches, or maybe I need to do a little bit more mobility? Is that something that's a soft tissue thing, or an actual knee thing mm-hmm. that I need to be concerned about? Like, and figuring it out, working around it, and being excited that you figured it out, or that you yeah. made the right choice, versus just like, again, powering through and then you're limping around for 3 days because you just yeah. muscled your way through squats, versus considering what your body is telling you.
Or, you know, another example of that is, okay, the workout says I'm supposed to do rows and I don't own a lat pull machine. Okay, well, do you have bands and can you mimic it? You know, it's like, what's going to stop you?
Right.
You know, so to the point you get excited about figuring out, you know, here's another way that that works.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of working that same kind of action.
On a side note, one of my favorite things to do is go on vacation and find gyms and do my workouts at the gyms. And because you never had the exact same machine. You're like, everything's a little bit different. But I just love going to a gym that I have no idea, I've never been to, and doing a workout. It's just weird and fun. All right. So functional neurology, a lot of people won't know what that yeah. means specifically. It's kind of in the realm of chiropractic care, but it also has a lot of other aspects mm-hmm. of it that really help you understand, diagnose, and help people solve their problems. So talk about that.
Yeah, so pretty much any time that you hear functional as it relates to healthcare, the word functional is really saying looking at the root cause, looking at the underlying root cause. So if you hear functional medicine, functional neurology, that's like where the focal point is what's behind what you think is a condition, what's behind that? Because just because there's a label for it, a diagnosis for it, doesn't mean that that's the problem. I mean, most all the time it's not, because that's not how the system is set up. Mm-hmm. It's an insurance money drug system, and it's about conditions. So functional means about what's the root cause of the problem. Okay, so in, you know, neurology means of the nervous system, but what is the nervous system? So the central nervous system is the brain and spinal cord, brainstem, spinal cord, and the whole rest of the nervous system is a peripheral nervous system. So how the body communicates, so sends information out, executes, and sends information back in, that is your nervous system. And your nervous system talks to every single cell, tissue, and organ in your body. So functional neurology is about finding what is the root cause problem that someone's presenting with. So they may say one thing, and that's great. And it's not like I humor them what they say. It's like, yeah, no, I listen to them. But if you say you have condition A, because this is what all the doctors have said, and meanwhile, there's been no resolve to it, despite all the years of drugs, surgeries, or therapies, or whatever, that label doesn't mean we found what the problem is. So we have to go hunt for looking for the problem. And so the fun part to me about functional neurology is that it's wide open, because every single thing in the body involves the nervous system. So when you understand the ins and outs from the smallest components, subcellular components, to the highest components, the whole organism, the whole person, knowing how those ought to work, it helps you see where they aren't working, and that gets you closer to the true root cause. And so when you can finally drill down and find that root cause, it gets pretty easy to help them. And so, because once we get to that spot, then many factors change. And most disease patterns, dysfunctions, and so forth, it's usually one or two things happening that cause this huge ripple effect of dysfunction. And so it makes me look like a genius when I find those things and these people heal. And I tell them all the time, I did not heal you. I cannot heal you. You were created to heal. Your body is a healing machine. You get a paper cut and it's just going to heal. There's things that you can do to make it heal more quickly. There's things that you can do to make it heal more slowly. Mm-hmm. And so when you identify what things are standing in the way of that, and you can help to influence that predictably using not just the nervous system, but the muscular system, chemical system, which includes nutrients, also includes toxicity, and your thoughts and emotions. Those are real things that impact your body. And when you can triangulate in on that thing and get to the root cause, the system works better. And that's really what functional neurology is identifying the root cause issue in the body, helping either to eliminate an excess or to fill a void so that the body returns to its inherent natural design. So people come to doctors all the time to get, quote, fixed. Mm-hmm. And I tell people who come to me, like, I can't fix you. I use this example, like the Statue of David is a masterpiece. You know, everyone's going to agree, right? Carved out of a single block. So there is the masterpiece. We were created as a masterpiece. Through our life, we throw chunks and clumps of the marble back on. And at some point we look and there's just jagged rocks sitting in front of us that we don't enjoy. And I can't make a David out of that thing. But what I can help happen is to remove the chunks and clumps of marble and boom, there's the masterpiece. Because we were already made that way. And so this is what functional neurology is to me. And yeah. So this is why people, you know, this is why I get a lot of credit from our, you know, the people that see me for healing. And I tell them all the time, it's like, I don't heal you. We identified the root cause and we helped you to take care of that. And their body gets better because we are just amazingly created.
This year you were honored with one of the top doctors in America, 2022. And you've been extremely successful here in Austin at really helping people. And it's, you know, there's lots and lots of testimonials about, you know, people's success and people kind of finding their David, to use that analogy.
Right.
You talk about root cause. You know, a lot has been brought up recently about gut health and kind of how that can really positively or negatively affect the system that we of our bodies. Talk about gut health and what you've seen over the last 4 or 5 years with that.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, I'm really excited.
That's
because
a rabbit hole, isn't it?
No, it's great. It's great. It can absolutely be.
Yeah.
And I'm excited that in recent years there's finally more doctors moving toward what's called functional medicine. And functional medicine is, again, looking at root cause of why is, and a lot of times they're looking at gut and endocrine kind of things. And a lot of times they'll be using nutrition to help that. Oftentimes they should be incorporating lifestyle into that. And sometimes they use medications for that. My beef with that is if you don't have a bridged and balanced brain, gut connection, one will not heal. If one is experiencing a chronic condition, especially, you know, let's say diverticulitis, let's say it's Crohn's disease. It doesn't have to be just a gut condition, but the gut is 80% of what makes your immune system, is 80% of what gives your brain the neurotransmitters to function. And it keeps the outside world out and lets only the certain things in that we need to have to rebuild and repair. Mm-hmm. And when that's damaged, you can come in and heal it different ways. But again, looking at a root cause standpoint, if you aren't looking at how the brain influences the gut to become inhibited, to then become dysfunctional, then you're missing the boat. And so fortunately, there's more and more work being done to help gut health. But if the brain and gut aren't bridged and balanced together, and this is critically important, that work has to be done simultaneously, then one will not heal long term. You can do the gut alone and one can get phenomenally better for several months. And then they will be back there if the brain is still not balanced. And in functional neurology, we're the only people out there who focus on brain balance.
So if someone did blood work and came back that some levels were off and there was a hypothesis that the gut was unhealthy, you know, someone might just take a bunch of enzymes or some, you know, there's a lot of gut health, mm-hmm. you know, over the counter, you know, drugs that you can take now to like kind of get your gut biome back and all that kind of stuff. Right. But if you don't address the neurological component to how the brain and the gut work together, then 3-4 months later, that all the whole system is probably out of whack.
You're going to be right back where you were.
So what is the neuro piece of that? How does one develop or solve the neurological side of that?
Well,
I'm sure that's different, but like, what's an example?
Well, it starts with an accurate assessment. Hmm. I mean, you first have to know. It's like if you open up a map, old school map, and say, this is where I want to go, but you don't know where the you are here point is, mm-hmm. then good luck, right? So you have to have an accurate assessment. That's the first thing that has to happen to get there. And unfortunately, the national average for doctor visit time length is 7 minutes because this is what insurance will reimburse. So that's, look, the docs have to keep their lights on.
Yeah.
You know, now I don't do 7 minutes because you can't get to the root cause in 7 minutes. You can almost not say hello in 7 minutes, right? Yeah. So it starts with being properly assessed, which means a proper history. You cannot do an accurate history in 7 minutes with a chronic condition, period. So you have to have a proper history where the doctor actually listens to you. And we all as doctors go through school hearing the same thing all the time, which is 90% of the accurate diagnosis comes from the history. Yet almost no doctors are present anymore in the room while they're taking a history. Instead, a tech is in there with an iPad asking you yes or no questions to click on a pad.
Absolutely.
So Sherlock Holmes didn't send Watson in and tell Watson to come back and tell him here are the variables to consider, because Watson doesn't see the way that Sherlock Holmes does.
Right.
So the history is really important. And then a workup is important. And this doesn't have to be a $1 million MRI or nerve conduction velocity test. It doesn't have to be these fancy schmancy things. In fact, most of the times they aren't. So just getting a proper assessment is the most important thing first, because then you can see, okay, here's where the body is. Here's where the gut is. And yes, in a non-invasive exam, you can evaluate the gut. You don't have to go up in there or down there or ultrasound it. It starts first with an exam. Too oftentimes these days, what doctors are doing are outsourcing their thinking to machines, run a patient through a machine to spit out a report to tell them what to think. Hmm. And so the art of listening to a patient and evaluating a patient is being lost.
Yeah.
And so that's the most important thing, is a proper assessment to then know, well, then how do we connect? What's missing here? What's out of balance?
Yeah.
So we can put these things together so the brain and gut can be bridged properly.
For some of the listeners or athletes who may not have necessarily conditions, but may want to find out more about what's going on inside. This is an interesting thing. I had a conversation with a fellow trainer, and we were talking about how people that are athletic are really good at being very functional, even with a dysfunctional system. Like when people are not that athletic, they usually get hurt pretty quickly when they're being dysfunctional, whether in their movement patterns or in their lifestyle. Oftentimes athletes can kind of will themselves really far into like dysfunction before they actually have symptoms that cause them to come to see a doctor or a functional neurologist. For someone who may not know that they even have anything, what would be a good assessment or check or just like,
yeah.
Hey.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So here's something you can do right now if you're listening.
There you go.
Okay. So let's just do this seated, because I don't know who's listening and I don't want anyone falling over.
Maybe driving, maybe working out.
Yeah. If you're driving, do not do this at this point. So just put your hands, your arms straight out in front of you and close your eyes and very slowly put the tip of your right ring finger to the very tip of your nose. Okay, bring it back out. With your eyes closed, put the very tip of your left ring finger to the very tip of your nose. Bring it back out. Now, did both right and left find the tip of your nose equally or not?
So I just did this, and my left was pretty much spot on. Right was about a half inch high.
Yeah.
So I hit the bridge of my nose, not the very tip.
Right. So we could either move your nose or we can balance your brain out.
Okay.
So how simple was that?
Very simple.
It's very simple to do. Now, if we broke down the spinocerebellar pathway, you would see how it's crazy complicated, all the things about you that have to happen right for you to operate balanced. But to fix that stuff, it doesn't have to be too complicated. Your body's already put together amazingly. We just have to push the right buttons. So if you missed your nose on that, you know that your brain's out of balance, because what controlled that was a system of sensing joint angulation, sensing at where is my face in space, where does my nose start, where does it stop. Maybe you hit your nose and you kept mashing through. Maybe you stopped before your nose and you're like, I didn't feel anything, so now I'll keep going, right? So this is just one little example of testing one part of the brain. So when we do this kind of thing, there's a series, there's kind of like steps of this. And the longer that somebody's with me, the harder I have to make it, because they keep getting sharper and sharper and sharper right. at these things.
You're fine tuning these.
Right. That's a simple one. For example, this is one that comes up frequently, is people who just say, yeah, I'm just kind of clumsy. I've always just been clumsy. Or you suddenly become clumsy. Like this week, I'm just off. If you hear a phrase like that come out of your mouth,
yeah,
then you need to get your brain checked. If like you aren't clumsy and you've knocked over a glass of water this week and you never do that, like that's not normal. You know, stuff happens, right? Or you have a friend that you walk down the street together, and you ever have a friend who walks with you and they kind of always walk into you a bit? You know what I'm talking about? That's a cerebellar problem.
Yeah.
That is a brain problem. And so these show up in all different kind of ways. So if it's getting especially tiring to read, if your focus, visual acuity toward the end of the day is very cumbersome, if you have trouble falling asleep at night because of thoughts, if you have trouble staying asleep at night because you just wake up, these are all different factors of how the brain influences the body, how the brain influences the metabolic system. And all these things are all tied together. This is the fun part about getting to do what I get to do, is I don't treat the eyeballs. I don't treat the staying asleep. I help to balance the system, and the body takes care of this stuff. Now, we can do that with predictability because we know the pathways and these kind of things. But it's so fun to do, because when the brain is balanced and the gut is well, the person is well and they thrive. So from an athlete standpoint, let's take barbell bench. How many people do you see do barbell bench that there's the one side that's the leader and the other side that kind of catches up to it? You know, it shouldn't be that way, you know? So there's all kind of things from a workout standpoint that you can see. As one jogs, does one hand come closer to the midline than the other? Does one hand cross the midline? You know, there's so many subtleties that you could look at these things. It's kind of like watching one of those shows, like a CSI show, where the guy goes in and you see the scene and there's the obvious body there, but did you see the pen that was clicked to the on position next to the notepad? Yeah, well, I saw that. And that's the key to the crime, right, you know, whatever thing is. So yeah. This is how the body shows up with these things. And we don't want to wait till it's a blown hamstring or, you know, any of these kind of things.
Right.
You know, so it could be subtle. But this is, that's an easy test to do, is just the finger to nose test. Just put your hands outstretched in front of you, close your eyes, slowly put your ring finger to your nose. And if it's on, great. If it's off, you got a little something going on. If you're secure with your balance and you can absolutely know that you're not going to fall over with your eyes closed, put their hands out in front and march in place with their knees coming up a bit, and then just close your eyes and just march for a while. And a while might be 20 seconds. Open your eyes, and are you exactly where you were when you started, or are you right or left or forward or back? You should be in the same place.
Right. Did your body kind of instinctively rotate a little bit to the left or to the right?
Yeah, and you won't feel it. You won't feel it happening until you open your eyes and like, wow, I moved.
Yeah.
That is an extreme amount of coordination to be able to do that. And it tells us a lot about the state of the brain and how the brain is understanding the body, what the body is executing, and what the body is telling back to the brain.
Right.
And so where, if you're not dead center where you started, where is the breakdown on that?
Yeah.
So those are some simple things that one can use. And look, when I'm saying your brain's in balance, that doesn't mean like you've got some medical issue, but you're not balanced and therefore you're not at your optimal self. So if you're busting your hump doing the hard work in the gym, it's easy for a functional neurologist to help you get balanced out. It's not hard for us.
Yeah.
And now your hard work becomes fruitful.
Getting more information is crucial. Like, if we don't know it, we don't know to fix it or to address it or take a look at it. And so if you're listening, a couple of tests you can do. Ring finger to your nose on both sides with your eyes closed, or march in place, arms out in front. See if you end up in the same spot after 20 seconds of having your eyes closed marching. For more information on Dr. Bourbon, there are some links and YouTube videos in the show notes. I could personally say that Dr. Bourbon has helped me discover the root cause of some of my neck and back issues, and it's made a drastic difference in how I show up at the gym. There can be a lot of reasons why your body and neuromuscular system aren't functioning optimally. So if you feel like some of your issues might be neurological, find a functional neurologist in your area and have them assess you. Gathering more information can only help you really understand what's going on, not just in your body, but in your brain. Thank you for listening to the Mindset Forge podcast.